And so as we expected, we finished the year with just over 35,000 total sales, 12% less than the year before, fewest since at least 2005.
What was the population growth over a 20-year period?
If we're going to grow the housing stock, we have to figure out a way to deliver apartments and condos. That's the reality of our region.
You know, it's interesting. Everyone will talk about a supply problem, an affordability problem. And that's where I always drive back to the like, well, what do we mean?
So we had more than 99,000 new listings last year, the most ever going back to 2005.
I have a terrible analogy, which I have not said in public before.
All right, kick off the podcast then. Let's go.
Welcome to the Rennie Podcast. I'm Ryan Berlin, Vice President of Intelligence and Head Economist at Rennie. And as always, I'm joined by Ryan Wise, our Market Intelligence Manager and Lead Analyst with Intel. Ryan, how you doing?
Great.
Good.
Happy to be here.
Good. As always, you have to be here, though.
But I'm happy to.
You have to, and you're happy about it.
Not just because Greg's here.
It's awesome. And then, so that's who we're joined. We are joined by Greg Ziadi, President. You don't like calling yourself president.
I can't
president.
Stand what the fact that like you're like, oh, vice president, manager, like you were both smarter than me. So who cares about this, what the
I mean, it's
are.
Just the titles don't matter.
They do.
We're just, it's we're workers. Yeah. Do you know what my kids call me? Do you know what when people say, what do you, when my kids' friends say, what does your dad do? They say he's a Rennie worker. I'm not kidding. So we're
Lana, talking. My wife tells me you're not at the office anymore. So check that title at the door.
Okay, before we get into like the meat and potatoes of this, why don't you tell, I mean, everyone knows who you are. If you're in the industry, you know Greg Ziadi. Maybe. For Bob and Nancy who are out there listening, watching, who's Greg Ziadi? What's the Coles Notes version of your career arc to this pinnacle of being on the Rennie Podcast here?
25 years. It's I grew up on the North Shore. I went to Western back east. And I've been in real estate for 25 years. Half of that time's actually been with Rennie. I have had the incredibly good fortune to work for some of the most amazing companies in this city. Ani, Anthem. I actually worked with Sotheby's a bit, with Ross McCready. I have worked at Rennie twice in my career now, which has been an amazing run. So I have gotten to work with Eric Carlson, Rosano Dakotis, Bruno Wall, Rick Illich. Like for our city, I've had such a great opportunity to connect and be part of so many amazing discussions and learn from so many great people. And it's been really exciting to spend half that time with Bob and Chris and be part of the Rennie company and just get to kind of like really mesh social, professional, intellectual in this city. And I'm even more excited now because, you know, it's certainly been a rough go. And what I've really been learning in the last year and a bit as we've been actively kind of outside of our own echo chamber that is the Lower Mainland, that is BC, and I think we can try to talk about a little bit of this, is my God, we are good at what we do. I don't care if it's construction, development, finance, sales and marketing, we know real estate. At everything, the people we have, the processes we have, the platforms we use, world class is an understatement. You know, the call I was on before this was about partnering on stuff in New York. So yeah, that's, I don't know. That's kind of who I am. I just have fun with this stuff and like hanging out.
It's the Mecca for real estate. And maybe that's more clear to you now that you're having more conversations with people in other cities that we kind of, maybe the default position is kind of look up to these cities. They seem like they have a bigger presence on the world stage. Yeah. Maybe they have a bigger population.
Older cities.
They're American. Yeah. Older cities. But Vancouver holds its own.
It absolutely does. I mean, you know, LA, San Francisco, Seattle, you know, I always find it amazing, right? We're looking at stuff in Oahu, mm-hmm. in Hawaii, and you go, holy crap, that's a city of a million people. Like, it's a big deal. But, you know, you look around and you realize that, call it an MBA, call it a microcosm, we've had such an opportunity to do it over and over and over mm-hmm. again. It's not about years of experience that we have. It's about the amount of times we've done what we do over and over and over again. And it's very cool. Like, I mean, it's really nice to be proud of what we do in the city we do it and now start to see where that impacts everywhere else. And certainly our industry knows that whether it's in San Diego, LA, Seattle, Bellevue, Phoenix, Austin, Texas. Vancouver has their fingerprint on those cities. Vancouver developers, Vancouver money, Vancouver expertise is embedded there. Toronto, Montreal, you name it. And that's cool.
It is cool. And I mean, that applies across the new home, the pre-sale, resale, and rental spaces. And we want to talk about each of those today. And I know, Greg, you don't want us to have a structure, but we have a structure. We're going to try to follow.
We brought some data, of course.
So we'll do it.
Ryan and Ryan, go at it. I'll stop talking.
No. You chime in. You're here to talk. But yeah, we want to run through some data for the year that was last year. Where did we end
up? Do I have to agree with it all?
No, of course not.
You don't have to agree. We want your perspective. And actually, I want you to talk about pre-sale. We'll talk about rental as well. We got a nice pre-Christmas present from CMHC there. An update on the rental market. A lot of interesting data elements and insights that we've gleaned from that. And then we want to talk about what we see ahead of us for this year and beyond. And I'll say the three of us here shoot the breeze on the market every day.
Damn right.
We have cameras and mics in front of us, but let's just have that conversation that we have each and every day right here. I guess I was going to ask you for opening thoughts, anecdotes, grievances, but you didn't give us grievances, but you gave us the others. So
a little bit.
Let's jump in. So 2025, Rye, obviously tough year for the industry here in Vancouver. I would say that also applies to other markets that we're in here in BC, Kelowna, Victoria, and more broadly markets across this country and in the US as well. Stuck in the mud for a whole bunch of reasons. What's your take? What's the official word on how we wrapped 2025 from a resale market perspective?
Yeah, I'd say December more of the same. So I mean, December is not a busy month to begin with, but you know, we had fewer than 2,400 sales, which is 11% less than 2024.
That was a slow year
to Pemberton, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Abbotsford. So the two board areas, the Vancouver board area and the Fraser Valley board area,
which is what, about 50% of the overall. I was in this discussion just recently with Elva over at Anthem, because she was questioning the thing I put out, but that is what we were always referencing, right? Is Pemberton to Abbotsford, which is significant, but it still actually was only 50% of the transactions throughout BC last year.
And that's pretty typical. Yeah. It's about half the province. For us, the functional region goes out there. Like the Fraser Valley board area includes Surrey. Surrey is a very important part of this market. And if you just look at the Vancouver board area, you're missing a lot of the population, a lot of the transactions.
You're missing half of the townhome and detached home transactions.
Yeah. The real market.
Yeah. Well, the real homes?
The real homes for real people.
Yeah, so it was about 23% below average. So most of the year has been in that range. And so as we expected, we finished the year with just over 35,000 total sales, 12% less than the year before, fewest since at least 2005, probably much more, but our data set purely goes back to 2005. 30% below average for the year. So past decade average was like 50. Now with this added in, it's 40, more like
I think it's 47,000 last 10-year average.
And what I always find interesting about that is like we're going back 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. What was the population growth over a 20-year period? How many more people joined our region?
I mean, this region between 1991 and 2016, because I have this number off the top of my head, the region's population doubled. Right. So we have, I mean, call it twice as many people, roughly twice as many homes. So really what we should be doing is population or
population adjusted basis.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And the picture. So to have your slowest year in sales in a growing region today means it was a really slow year.
Really slow year. Really slow for sales, but not for listings. There's my segue.
Nice.
So we had more than 99,000 new listings last year, the most ever going back to 2005, but probably ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't hit 100,000. So a lot of that ends up being expiries that got relisted or cancellations, price changes got relisted, but not so much so. Mm-hmm. Like we just had a whole bunch of product come to market that ultimately didn't transact. And so we finished the year with more than 18,000 active listings at the end of the year, which is the most since 2008.
And that, but that came off, right? We peaked in mid-October at about 26,000.
Which is typical seasonality. Yeah. Then we get the New Year's drop. So every year from December 31st to January 1st, we get a big drop. So we had a huge one this year because the base was so high. Mm-hmm. So it dropped to just over 16,200, which is a 13% decline in one day. The year before 11, year before 12, that's like typical seasonality.
Do you remember back in, it must have been 2021 to 22?
Yeah, we ended up the year,
December 31st, we had 6,600 listings, and it dropped to 6,000 on January 1st. So it was only a 600 listing drop, but on a base of 66.
And historically, we sort of, it's been so much fun over, honestly, the last 10 years, how we've gotten so dialed into this. And I know you and we were teasing each, I was teasing Ryan over Christmas that we can't get away with rounding anymore. Like, we know the data so freaking well.
Yeah.
Like, I go back to the days when UDI would like put out the like, what's your prediction? I'm like, what a joke. Like, we could nail that within like, you know, such a percentage. So, you know,
it's a blessing and a curse.
It is a blessing and a curse. But, you know, one of the other stats, one of the other things that I think is seems consistent and interesting is it's that drop. And then it's about what, 30 to 50% increase typically in the first 90 days of the year. So if we're sitting at 16,000, we're projecting what, anywhere from another 5,000, 6,000 to 8,000 listings coming on the market, new activity, net of sales in the next 90 days.
It'll ramp
so we're going to be back up at 23,000 to 24,000 before we know it.
And we're a week into January and it's already started.
Yeah.
So the seasonality with listings and inventory is there. It's already starting to happen.
In the pre-sale market. So Greg, your thoughts. We know the data is not fully in for Q4. We have a good sense for how the year went. What's your take on the year that was?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, right? When we always tether the pre-sale market and resale market together, and they sort of, they almost like pull each other in opposite directions at times. So, you know, really what we know is the pre-sale market's going to do about 6,100 new pre-sales. I guess what's
last year.
In 2025, 6,100 new pre-sales. And what's getting very interesting about that is now dissecting that further. You could dissect it by concrete and wood frame, and we can talk about that. But the new reality is, how is that actually impacting the delivery of inventory or the underlying economics of the industry? And of those 6,100 listings, right, primarily what we're starting to focus on is empty unsold condos, developer-owned standing inventory. And that's probably a third of it. I'm going to guess about 2,000 sales were done in that bucket. Then another third, 2,000 units, were probably sold in stuff that's actually under construction. These are financed. These are ready to go. They're off and running. The last third, 2,000, is what we all historically think of when we see pre-sale. You launch a building, you sell some homes within 12 months, you amend your disclosure, and away you go under construction. So of the, what we're going to guesstimate 65 projects launched this year, which is, you know, basically half or not less of the 10-year average of over 150. 65 projects equated to about 7,000 units sold, or 7,000 units released, and only 2,000 of those sold. Mm-hmm. Well, half those projects probably are not moving forward with financing. So that is a very different story than we've seen in the past when we were averaging 12, 13, 15,000 pre-sale transactions, and 90% of those or 70% of those would have been what I would call pure pre-sale today.
Yeah.
Not yet under construction. Yesterday's never coming back. And tomorrow's going to look really different.
It will. I mean, especially you alluded to it, but especially in this province, in this market, our primary delivery vehicle for new homes is that pre-sale market, right? Because we don't have space to add ground oriented. We had some townhomes. There's a few thousand townhomes.
A few more each year. Multiplexes are coming now, but nowhere near the scale that we build condos.
Yeah, there's infill. Yeah. But it is, if we're going to grow the housing stock, we have to figure out a way to deliver apartments and condos. That's the reality of our region.
Yeah. I you know, it's interesting. Everyone will talk about a supply problem, an affordability problem. And that's where I always drive back to the like, well, what do we mean? It's tough to watch some of the articles that came out over the holidays, right? I don't know if you guys saw the BBC one on Worker Bee Condos. So there was this report called Worker Bee Condos that came out of the UK, and it was targeting Toronto and Vancouver. And it was like, Nobody wants to live in 300 to 500 square feet. Don't kid yourselves. These are worker bee condos. And do we need more of that? Probably not. So what do we need? What does supply look like? How do we deliver it? Those are things that, as I've said, we and all other major metropolitans are grappling with. And I don't think we've got it figured out. And I don't think we're going to know how to figure it out tomorrow. I think it's going to take a lot of time.
I agree. So where we don't have a an issue, well, we haven't in the last few years of delivering supplies and rental. It's also that space for our company is taking up more bandwidth as we move into lease ups, particularly in Metro Vancouver and in Kelowna, but elsewhere as well. So we're just taking an increased interest in what is happening in the rental market. And that is increasingly, we are seeing a shift of people moving towards rental and away from ownership. The financing around rental is a lot more favorable today than it was prior to a decade ago. So
why own when you can rent? We've reversed the equation. It used to be, why rent when you can own?
Yeah.
I mean, financially, maybe I think, rental's better.
I mean, I think the reality is people own and rent for a whole host of reasons. It's not just about dollars and cents. You know, we just conducted a survey of buyers and renters, and we found that, yeah, a significant proportion of renters, if affordability wasn't an issue, would like to buy, but not all of them. So, you know, we are going to continue to be a region that needs to have housing across the spectrum. We talk about, hey, we don't just need 300 to 500 square foot condos. We need other types of housing, a diversity of housing that people actually want to live in. That goes for tenure too. It's not just ownership. It's not just rental. It's both.
And rental home sizes have been shrinking along with condo because the cost pressures apply to both.
So with that as a backdrop,
okay.
And let's get through this quickly.
I'll go get a coffee.
Yeah. Greg doesn't care about rental.
That's not true. I care. I don't want to keep talking about it.
A couple minutes on it though, because we do have new data and we're seeing things in the data we haven't seen before.
Absolutely. So CMHC once a year produces their rental market report. They do a survey every October looking at the entire purpose-built rental market. So not just new rental homes, all homes, old and old stock as well. And as everyone expected, it shows a softer market. I think there's a couple really interesting things come out. Everyone always looks at that top line vacancy number. What happened? It went from 1.6% in 2024 to 3.7% in 2025. That's the highest it's ever been in this report going back to 1990. That next highest was like 2.6 during COVID. So if you throw that outlier out the window, it's, you know, we're really in uncharted territory. We've never hit 3% before, but vacancy is not distributed evenly. There's quite a difference between old and new and rental rate ranges. I know you'd pulled the by different rents.
By rent quartile, yeah. And which actually has, big implications for the space that we operate in, working with clients to lease up new rental. And that is the new rental space is where the deliveries are coming from. So it is worth noting that the vacancy rate for rents in the upper quartile, so top 25% of rents in this region have a vacancy rate, those units have a vacancy rate of almost 7%, right? So that is a function of a lot of new supply that has been delivered over the past decade, but also specifically over the last couple of years, matched with what I would call waning demand, right?
Population decline.
I guess two pieces. Number one, what I think you just soft-pedaled, Ryan, was it is a matter of value. Like the market's not meeting the market. No different in the for sale market or the rental market. Guess what? The supply availability of homes over 1 million, 2 million, well, 1 million, maybe not detached and lower means a little bit tough, but like just keep adding dollars to it and watch the availability go up and up and up. No different than rental. Reduce. It gets tighter and tighter and tighter. The we are unable to meet the market where it is.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a key piece. And to me, that's interesting because as you guys were talking, I go, what are you talking about? You're telling me we've got the highest vacancy rate ever. We've had more supply, 99,000 new listings this year, lease sales. The hell is everyone talking about a supply problem? There's empty boxes all over this place of every size known to man. Mm-hmm. So do we have a supply problem?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Yes. It is about
yes. Things.
Yes. Okay. We have a long-term supply problem. I think this is, I have a terrible analogy, which I've not said in public before, but I mean it like
we're not in public. It's okay.
It's like you've got somebody who's malnourished, right? Like you don't bring that person back to health by taking them to a buffet for dinner one night and saying you're good, right? Like this is where we're at right now. We have had a confluence of factors, policy, macroeconomic, local, that have converged at once to create a situation where we have on paper surplus supply. None of this just papers over the long-term structural deficit mm-hmm. in housing that we have had. But to your point, Greg, you're right. People don't want to pay what housing needs to sell for.
Or aren't rent able for, to.
Or aren't able yeah. to. Yeah, when I say, I'm talking like an economist. Yeah. They, that's right. They're not able to, why. Right? Or the value is not, some people can pay, but they don't see the value in the way that they did when prices were $700 a square foot versus $1,200. Right. So that is the issue. And so supply and demand works. Like we've been right all along. You add more supply, values are going to come down. We're seeing that in rental. But then there's a feedback loop because then the economics of projects start to fail because values are being pushed down to a floor that at some point developers look at and they say, I can't bring a project to this market profitably anymore. And so then what happens is, you have a period where you have less development and prices start to rise. So in all of that, the key is how do you bring down the cost of development, the cost of delivery?
And we know we're still undersupplied in the overall stock of homes because of the way households have formed and are forming. So we have still a whole bunch of households that are, you know, include 30-year-old adult children living at home, roommates into their 30s, into their 40s. If we organized ourselves on an age related basis the way we did 20 years ago, we would have like 40,000 more households than we otherwise do. So we don't have the right kind of housing at the right kind of price, whether that be ownership or rental, to meet the needs of the people that we have here today.
Okay. Good answer.
We are building a lot more homes.
We are building more homes. That will stop in the next couple of years.
I think it already did.
It actually had, there is a bit of inertia here. We're going to see deliveries continue for the next couple of years, but it will fall off.
So there's a lot of homes under construction, both ownership and rental. About half the available new home inventory today is homes under construction that will come regardless.
We've never had to deal with this reality. And there's, so there's, and I'm not 100% accurate, but I know this is close enough. So there's 2 points in construction that impact financing. And we're seeing it right now. Developers, smart developers, conscious developers, pragmatic developers, dig the hole. When you hit that bottom of the hole, decide. Decide if you're moving forward. Because the minute you start coming up and build the parkade, that's go time. For a bank, the minute it hits the slab on grade, so you've dug the hole, you've built the parkade, that's the point at which you're almost at no return. Mm-hmm. The bank will have to take it over and finish the building. So we're starting to see that. There was a number of projects, and this happens all over the world. We're just not as used to it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They dig a hole and they go, stop. Do you fill it in? Do you cover it up? I mean, we've seen this over time in our city, just not in the last 15 years or so. But it's happening right now.
One example, and it was pre-Olympics, pre-recession. I wasn't going to say it, but yeah.
Well, I'll say it. It's not called the Ritz anymore. It's called the Trump. No, it's not called the Trump. Yeah, it's the paradox.
I wasn't going to name it, but yes. That's the only one I can think of in Vancouver in the time that I've been in the industry.
Right.
Yeah. There's a few hanging out there right now. Okay. I won't name them, but there are a few.
Okay. The future. Let's talk about the future. Sure. Let's move on from rental. Well, we already did. The year ahead. Let's just open it up. You've been in the industry for 25 years. We've never seen anything like this. I was just looking at... You took my chart. I had a chart. No, it's okay. It's okay. I don't need it.
It's the folded up piece of paper over there.
Our listeners love this.
Yeah. Let's leave all of this in.
I don't know. I think it.
I like it.
I remember when we created this chart.
So I just updated. Yeah. I haven't formatted it. I updated it. So we took the chart we're looking at here for people who can't see. You can hold it up. But if you're listening, you still can't see.
It's so pretty.
We indexed market cycles back in 08, 09.
Right here. That's when we started this chart.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we indexed benchmark condo prices in Metro Vancouver over three cycles, 08, 09, 17, 18, and then beginning in 2022. So we took them all to their starting value at the beginning of those. That was essentially the peak of the market. And then prices fell and we mapped out when they returned to their previous peak. In 08, 09, it took a little less than 2 years for condo prices to come back. In 17, 18, I mean, really that spread into early COVID, and COVID gave it a real boost as transactions picked up, but it took about 3 years. We are now 4 years. It was May 2022 when condo prices peaked.
With and three mini recoveries and three peaks within that broader cycle.
We really got kicked at the beginning of this year where there was some momentum. And I we cannot blame all of this on Donald Trump, but a new source of uncertainty got injected into this market when the market was frail. So we have now we've now seen prices come off. Condo prices are 10% off today where they were almost 4 years ago. So that's our backdrop. We know it's been a slow sales environment, a lot more supply. What do we see? What are the big themes for 2026?
You know, I context, perception, repositioning in how we think about things, how we look at things. So, you know, I love asking the follow-up question. People are like, I think things are going to get better or be better. Oh, good. How much better?
Yeah.
What defines better? Because if we did 35,000 transactions in the Lower Mainland last year and it goes up 20%, we're still not at our 10-year average.
Nope.
If it goes up 10%, we don't even match 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So is that better? I mean, of course it's better. Better is simple. Show me one differential from the year before and that's a better year. Are you going to feel better? Probably not.
Maybe the better question is, what is the new typical? Because we can say
Let's get there.
Okay, go for it.
Well, context, right? Our dear friend, Mike Delpretti.
Do you want to tell people who he is if they don't know who he is?
Yeah, Mike Delpretti is fun, is smart. We met him. He's kind of, I will call him the foremost expert initially on prop tech. Now he covers a lot of real estate industry. If you want to learn everything you can about the Zillow, Compass, Battle, and follow any of those stories, Mike Delpretti, brilliant guy. I've gotten to spend time with him. He's come and visited us with us. He's spoken with us. He's professor in residence at the University of Colorado, I believe. And he talks about context. And we love per capita. Because my favorite is when people tell you a number, but there's no context to it. It's like, oh, the population grew by 3,000 people or 300,000 people. And you're like, yay.
A little?
That means nothing to me until you tell me what the base number was. So contextually, our market was not normal for the last 25 years, right? Like you look at the per cap turnover of real estate. And I might get the numbers wrong, and I think they're reasonably accurate, but this is our gateway study that we've been doing. Sales per 1,000 human beings in a marketplace. I think Vancouver was 10.2 per 1,000 on a five-year average. Toronto was 10.4. LA, 7-point-something maybe. Chicago was high 10s or 12. New York, 4.6. When you look at these numbers, we were transacting real estate at a pace that did not make logical sense. We have to accept that. We have to understand that immigration, foreign capital, appreciation drove a market. And we can say it's good, we can say it's bad. It's just the reality of what was. So The 40,000 transactions that we saw last in 2024, the 42,000 of that year, I think it's hard to look at historical averages and think that those mean anything moving forward.
What I wanted to add to that too is what we cannot forget is that we are coming out of an era of declining interest rates, which obviously impact all markets. That doesn't explain Vancouver's exceptionalism. But
what a positive word.
What's that?
I'd use real estate junkie, but I see exceptionalism.
So, you know, we have 40 years where interest rates were falling, which supported rising values. And that era is over. Like you look over the last 20 years and prices in this region have risen on a compound basis by 6% per year. Going forward, I think we'll be lucky if it's 3% per year. So the calculus has changed. And I think we had the luxury in the past as a market, not for every person, not everyone can afford a home and not everyone could. We had, a broadly speaking, the luxury of paying a higher price to live in a place that we wanted to live previously. And that is not the case now. There are more constraints on what we can afford and where we can live.
Yeah. The other part of it that I would want to look into, especially when you mentioned New York, which I believe has a much higher proportion of renters.
Correct. And cost.
Yeah. But also for 25 years, for longer than 25 years, we didn't build purpose-built rental in this market. And the mom and pop investors, who were a big part of those transactions,
absolutely
filled that gap. And so now purpose-built rental is back. It's a feature of our market. And that's going to crowd out some of those mom and pop investors. And so more people will buy one home and live in it and not buy one home and then buy one condo and then buy a second condo. And so I think part of that per cap decline that we're going to have going forward will just be from fewer mom and pop investors.
I think that's the narrative for 2026, 2027, 2028. I think it's a couple years of it. Get excited about this market. Because this is the market. If you are waiting for something different, if you are waiting for better, whatever your definition of better is, I'm excited about this. I'm excited for us to play in rental. I'm excited for us to figure out how we advise all of these real estate savvy people. There's still lots of money in the system. We still live in one of the most amazing places in Vancouver. And to take that outside of Vancouver, I still believe urban centers. You know, there was that book years ago called When Mayors Rule the World, right? And what they were talking about was the power of urban centers. Sure, COVID might have taken a dent in it, but I think over time, that's all going to come back. I think we all love secondary markets. We all love vacation property. But really what it is that where is the energy? Where is the power? Where is that social connection? And it still happens in our major cities. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited by what's possible, but I'm excited by what is. And I think we all have to build businesses, whether you're a realtor and an independent, whether you're a developer, a construction company, a supplier. And again, this is not a uniquely Vancouver problem. Right now, this is the market that we're in. And there's not a lot of signals that's saying it's going to be different over the next 24 months.
Okay, with that in mind, and as we wrap up here, with this being the market that we're in, what are we doing as a company? What are the things you're excited about that we are doing as a company to navigate this, I'm not going to say changing, it's a changed landscape. Yeah.
Inside baseball, outside baseball, we are being very realistic and pragmatic about what the market can deliver. What can we connect to? What can we attach to? Toughest year going, you know, we had to adjust the company, adapt our model. That came with a lot of really tough decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, if I said last year was about survival, this year is about sustainability. Mm-hmm. And hopefully year 2027 or 2028 will be about strive. So, you know, being really open and blunt about it, what are you doing to deliver on the revenue? What are you doing to manage your costs? And what are you doing to take care of your people and your culture, as we like to talk about exceptional hospitality for our home office, for our advisors, for our clients in all areas? What are you thinking about tactically, operationally? And then there's some parts of strategic, but strategic's not an easy thing right now. Mm-hmm. And then I go back to, we're really focusing on the people, the process, and the platform. The platform's the intel, the platform's the data, the platform's AI. It's all these great things that we're doing. So, you know, we are not the company we were 10 years ago.
And thank goodness.
Yeah, thank goodness. No, you're absolutely right. Because if we were reliant on selling a 350-unit pre-sale concrete high-rise tower, we do not have a business or a company. So we are a real estate services business. We are a real estate services company. You watch this year. Ask all the people we know. And they're like, I'm a developer. Nope, they're not going to say that anymore. They're going to say, I'm in real estate. So we are not a pre-sale marketing company. We are a real estate services company. We have six different revenue lines that all are slowly contributing to that top line revenue, mm-hmm. bottom line mm-hmm. revenue that are covering the expenses. So we are focused on those things. And I'm excited by our position in market, both here locally and outside of this market. There's a number of exciting things that I think are going to come together this year that I'm very much looking forward to. And Bob's energized, and Chris is supportive. And, you know, considering the year that we've had, it's not easy to sit there and say I'm excited for what's ahead, but I am, and I'm keen on our position in market. We have so much to leverage, and fun to be had.
Well said. And just to go back to a concept we touched on earlier, we said context matters. For all of us that are here doing what we've been doing, or maybe doing more than we were doing before, is sure going to feel good when the market is, it doesn't need to be that much busier, but a stable market, even a stable market that we can operate in. And for us here at this company in different parts of that market is something I'm very excited for, right? It's something to look forward to for all of us.
We are all young, I find, in this room, and I'm probably the oldest person in the room. We have so many years left at this. Like, honestly, I just turned 48 just before Christmas. And, you know, I always joke, I say, when you're in your 20s, you look at things in months, if not a year. When you're in your late 20s, you're starting to think 18 months out. By the time you're in your 30s, you're looking 2 to 3 years out. I'm looking 5 to 8 years out. Mm-hmm. May of 2022, this market started to change, flatten, go down. It's been 4 years. We're moving into year five. Yeah. That's okay. I'm ready for another couple of predictability.
Yeah. Listen, you can only walk halfway into a forest, right? Before you're walking out. Okay. Right. How about that?
I'm still trying to picture it, but I get it.
Okay. Great stuff. I want to pivot to our listener question. Angela wants to ask us something.
Angela here. We keep hearing that 2025 was the bottom of the market. Do you agree? And if that's the case, what's making you feel good about where things are headed?
I don't know what the bottom means. I think we've been at the bottom of the market. To your point, we've had three mini bumps, three mini troughs, whatever you want to call it. So are we at the bottom of the market? Sure. I mean, it's hard to say that the absorption go lower. Listen, there's pricing opportunities out there. So I don't know what that means for bottom or not. Opportunity is available. Things are not necessarily getting cheaper, but at the same time, they're not necessarily getting more expensive. Mm-hmm. So we are in a bit more of a predictable market. I think, you know, we spent many years in FOMO, fear of missing out, pressure to make a decision, pressure to try and figure it out. I think that pressure is relieved right now. And that might be defining what is a firm footing for us to move forward on.
Yeah. I think from a transaction perspective, probably we hit bottom. I think last year was probably that. But from a pricing perspective, I think we're moving sideways.
And listen, a balanced market. Ultimately, a balanced market is what you need for a sustainable market, right? Everybody, you win on both sides. We're talking about a market that has sellers and buyers, right? We have a lot of supply right now. We have prices that have been softening. If you are in the market, you have an opportunity of a lifetime.
Yeah. And right now. Like, rates still feel elevated from what we're used to. But they're stable now. Like, no one's expecting more rate cuts in the next few months. The Bank of Canada has been very explicit about that.
We can live with any interest rate. Yeah. It's what we can't live with are interest rates that are changing wildly in both directions.
Which is we've had since 2022. Since 2020.
The housing market can be...
Down, up, down.
Yeah. The housing market can be active with 2% mortgage rates, 3%, 4%, 5%. Long as we have some certainty about... Okay. Where they're going to be. Okay, that's it for the main programming here. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, look, how do you distill everything down to a really simple formula or number? That's kind of always fun. And, you know, I believe what over great conversations with, you know, the Bo Jarvises of the world and many other smart people, I think we've landed on $700 to $900 a square foot. I think if you reverse that out on rental, we'd find that meets the sweet spot of a per square foot rent that the market can really, like, how do you hit the sweet spot of the market? How do you grab the most people in a percentage basis and put your arms around that? So $700 to $900 a square foot. You want to deliver brand new inventory that's going to sell? That's the number. You want to deliver rental? That's the number that'll get absorbed. You want to buy a house out there right now? I don't care if it's 5,000 square feet or 500 square feet. I actually don't care if it's 30 years old or 2 years old. Show me $700 to $900 a square foot and I will show you a market.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Sweet.
Okay. Greg, thanks for being on.
Happy New Year, all.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
2026.
Right on.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on the Rennie Podcast. If you'd like to learn more or to subscribe to intelligence updates, go to rennie.com/intelligence.